Good evening, everyone. We're going to be studying Acts 27 tonight. So if you don't have a Bible, I would rather you have one. And there's several in the auditorium here. If you need to go get one, I'll wait just a minute till you do. The 27th chapter of Acts is one of those places in the Bible that it doesn't mean much to us, and we just kind of read through it. If we spend much time on it at all, it's just kind of a skimming of it. And so what we're going to do tonight, basically, is we're going to waste some time. We're going to waste some time with a chapter that's just not worth looking at. Now, you know better than that. Because one of the things about God is God never was too wordy. Took him very few words to say what he wanted to say. I remember when I met a friend I hadn't seen for a long, long time, a few years ago. She asked me, she said, "Tell me a little bit about yourself." The next time she got to speak was about 30 minutes later. You remember Moses? Moses said to God, "Now who am I going to tell them sent me?" And God said, "I am." That covered it. It's an amazing thing when you stop and think about it. That covered it. And so as you start looking at this chapter, one of the things that I want you to get from this lesson tonight, it's almost as important to me as the lesson that God's trying to teach us. But this, I want you to realize that when you're reading your Bible, and I hope each and every one of you do, as you're reading your Bible and you come to places that don't mean much to you and you just kind of skip over them, or you find that, I realize that here's from this verse to that verse, there's a section right in here that I just really don't know what it means. I just kind of don't pay much attention to it. Kind of mark that in your mind, or mark it on a piece of paper so that you go back and once in a while you read it extra and you keep looking at it until God begins to help you understand what it means. Because that's critically important. Critically important. He gave us his word to understand. Not for special people among us to understand. He gave it to us to understand. It is my letter. This is my letter from my God to me. And he meant for me to understand it. And so we want to be sure that we take that seriously as we study our Bibles. Then there's the lesson that God teaches us in this chapter. As I begin on this, we're going to look at a boat. And we're going to ask a question. And it's an important question, and I think you'll agree with me when we finish. When did these men sink this boat? When did they lose it? When did they wreck it? And to do that, we're going to start at the end of the chapter, and we're going to start reading backward a few sections at a time. But we're basically going to do it backward because I think that's the best way to look at it. Because what you're going to find is that right up to the time that the ship was gone, they were just as busy as they could be to save it. Everything they could do to try to save this ship, they tried to do. And so we're going to start in about verse 33 in Acts 27. And this is the reading in which they're going to lose the ship. But I want you to notice that even as they lose the ship, and for 2 weeks they've been trying to save this ship, as they lose this ship, as you watch this, you're going to see that they're still working to do everything that they can, possibly, to save it. Okay? So let's start reading in verse 33. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take some meat, saying, "This day is the 14th day that you've tarried, and you fasted, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health. There shall not a hair fall from the head of any of you. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread, and he gave thanks to God in the presence of them. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. And we were in all in the ship about 276 people. And when they'd eaten enough, they lightened the ship, and they cast out the wheat into the sea. And when the day was come, they did not know the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into this which they were minded that it were, if it were possible, they're going to thrust the ship in there. Now they're doing everything they can to save this ship. This is their cargo was wheat. They have saved that up to now, and it's near the bottom of the ship. They have saved all of that weight up to now as a ballast to help them keep that ship under control as they're in those high winds. And now, to get rid of that, and because now it's daytime and they can begin to see what they've got ahead of them, they realize that now we're in this ship, we can stand here and we can look across, we can see the top of the water, and we can see the island that we want to put the ship on. But there's things we can see, it's like life, isn't it? There's things we can see and things we can't see. So what we want to do, we want to make this ship as high in the water as we possibly can. So the last of all the weight has got to go now because we've got to save this ship. And so they begin to throw out all the cargo that they've kept for so long. And the reason they were going to Rome in the first place. And so as they do that, and as they watch themselves and they're doing the things they're doing, they look across and they realize, and here's a place where you see sand on both sides of a creek. Probably a good place to set the ship into the sand so we can take it from there and do the repairs that are needed on it. Get the things that are needed to get us back on the sea. Their concern is saving this ship. Let me keep reading. When they'd taken up the anchors, they committed themselves to the sea. They loosed the rudder bands. They hoisted up the mainsail to the wind, and they made toward shore. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable. But the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they all escaped safe to land. And now they're standing on the island. And they can look back to where they were. And they see the broken pieces of that ship in the sea, and they see the broken pieces on the coast around them. Probably some part of the ship is still out there where they can see it, but the ship is gone. As the fellow says on the commercial, it's gone. It's just gone. They've wrecked it. It's gone. It's no longer there. But when did they wreck it? That's important. It's an important question. And God asks the question and answers the question in this little story he's telling for you and I, because we have an immortal soul that's critically important to us. To understand that, you have to understand how important this ship is to them. That ship is everything to them. Absolutely everything. It's their livelihood. It's their living. It has to do with their life and whether or not they live or they die. Their lives are completely built around this ship. Sometime when you're talking to Gil, ask him how important it is when he was in the ship. I never was. I was a sailor, but I never was on a ship. Ask him how important it was to keep that afloat. It's very important. And everything was wrapped up in that ship, just exactly like I have an immortal soul. And everything in this world that is important to me is wrapped up in that immortal soul and me getting it to heaven. Everything. Absolutely everything. And that's where they are, and they're standing on this, and they realize they've missed the mark. They've failed. The ship has gone down. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to read this, like I said, a little bit backward, okay? Because we want to watch how they got to this place and see if we can find where it was that they lost the ship. So go back with me, if you will. We're going to go back to about verse 27 and read down to 32. And I want you to watch carefully what they're doing. When the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria about midnight, the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country. And they sounded and they found it about 120 feet deep. And when they'd gone a little farther, they sounded again and they found it 15 or about 90 feet deep. Fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and they wished for the day. And the shipmen were about to flee the ship, and they let down the boat into the sea under color, as though they had cast anchors out of the foreship, or would cast anchors out. And Paul said to the centurion that, except these stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. And the soldiers just cut the ropes of the boat off and let her fall away. They don't need that boat. We got to save this ship. What you and I know about the story now, we think it would have been wise to keep that boat, but that wasn't the point. We got to save this ship. And they're doing everything they can to try to save this ship. They'd cast those anchors out to keep it still, keep it steady, till they could see where they were in the morning, so they could make decisions about what they thought they might be able to do to save it. And that's how they spent this whole 2 weeks. I want you to back up with me again. We're going to go back to verse 20. We're going to read down to 26. And I want you to watch the things that happened there. When neither the sun nor the stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay upon us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. And after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them, and he said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened to me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. And I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you but the ship." Now notice what God just said. "I'm going to spare all the lives, but the ship's already lost." But it wasn't something that happened later that lost the ship. They've already sunk the ship. That's critically important to remember. Okay, it's already gone. "For these, there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve." That little verse 23, if you've never marked it, it's critically important. In many of your Bibles, if you have something other than the King James, where I have the word servant, it has slave. That's the actual word that's there. In 1611, when they were doing the King James Bible, if they had put slave all the way through it, what the people read and then looked out in the streets, what they saw was men and women and children tied to posts with chains that were going to be sold. They couldn't bring themselves to do that. And so they put the word servant, to use a milder term, and a word that wasn't used every day. But that word, that verse is a perfect description and definition of a slave. Paul said over and over that he was a slave of God. Peter said he was. The writers of the New Testament many times expressed that they were the slaves of God. Let me read it to you again. Watch it very carefully. "There stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve." I'm a slave too. And you're a slave. It's a very important verse to us. "Saying, fear not, Paul, because you're going to be brought before Caesar, and God has given you all of those that sail with you. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God it shall be even as was told to me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island. So their concern is still that ship, still that boat. But Paul tells them it's already lost. It doesn't matter. They're going to save it. Go back with me, if you will, to verse 13. 13 through 19. And this is the beginning of their trip. It's after the decision has been made to go, but it's the beginning of their trip. And watch carefully. When the south wind blew softly, supposing they'd obtained their purpose, they know of another place they would like to be over the wintertime rather than in the bay that they're in. When the south wind blew softly, supposing they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon, or a northeastern. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island, which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat. They're talking about what they've got to do to save it. And running under a certain island called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship. Now, all they're talking about there, the things that they're talking about, they could take ropes. They could throw them off the front, and a sailor could walk back toward the back with them. And as the boat moved forward, it moved across that rope. These were just made out of planks. These boats were made out of planks. And by pulling that up on both sides and tying it to that hull, they could tighten everything up. They could hold it together. That's what they're busy doing. They're saving their ship. And when they'd taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into quicksands, they strake sail and were driven. And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. The third day, we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. They are so busy trying to save this ship. It's got to be saved. It's all we've got. It's got to be saved. Now go back with me, if you will, to verse 6. There the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And when we had sailed softly many days and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed unto Crete over against Simone. And hardly passing it, we came to a place that's called the Fair Havens, near whereunto was the city of Lycia. And when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them and said to them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with much hurt and much damage, not only of the lading in the ship, but also of our own lives. Nevertheless, watch carefully now. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master, that's the captain of the ship, and the owner of the ship. They're both aboard. Okay? And this centurion listened to them, and evidently he could make this decision on his own. He was a Roman centurion, whether or not they left here. And he listened to them. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, and the more part, now notice that word more part, the majority of them, they all had their opinions, every one of them. Sailors, whoever they were, they had their opinions about what they wanted to do. Now, I can tell you one thing about sailors. If there weren't a lot of pretty girls in that town, they wanted to go somewhere else. That's just the nature of sailors. And because the haven was not advised to depart, was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart from also. If by any means they might attain to Phoenicia and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete and lies toward the southwest and the northwest. Now I want you to notice something. You have some men who are standing and talking about what they need to do next. They have winter ahead of them. Things are pretty calm right now. And they're talking about what they need to do to save the ship and to save their own lives. Now, among these men, 276 of them in all, among these men who are talking about this and standing around talking is a man by the name of Paul. Paul doesn't know nearly what they know about saving a ship. But the one thing about Paul is, and what's important about that, is that God, because of Paul, has gotten in to this question about what they need to do. And he tells them not to do it. God, not Paul. Paul wouldn't have known that. God told them not to do it. And they did it. Now, when did they seek the ship? Right then. That's when they sunk it. It was gone. And it told us later, before they ever got to where they did sink it, that the ship was gone. What they had done was sunk this ship already. Now, how did they do that? That's what God's trying to teach us. With my immortal soul, if I do not listen to what God had to say, I will lose it. And it doesn't matter how hard I work, and it doesn't matter what I do. I tell you a little story about me and my son. We put a car hauler behind a pickup one time and went down to Debbie's cousin. And we were going to bring back one of the old Ford Broncos. It was a neat old car. He was a full-blooded Indian. He went on where they would dig up old arrowheads and things like that, and the old camps of the Indians around the lakes, and he would go to those sorts of things, and he offered me that car. And I said, sure, I'll come down and pick it up. I'd love to have it. And about 30 miles from home, we picked up a boy that was just hitchhiking. I don't often do that, but since Chris was with me and the two of us, and we picked him up, put him in the car with us. And as he got in the door, he told us that we were about to be witness to. And we didn't get to say one word for about 25 miles. We were being witnessed to, and boy, he was busy doing it too. I mean, we got some witnessing going on in that car. And when he got out, then it was quiet again. And he had worked for the Lord the whole time he was in there. It's pretty obvious from what he said that he hadn't paid any attention to what God said about how to go to heaven. When I tell you that story, it didn't matter how many people he witnessed to. It didn't matter how many things he did. It didn't matter how hard he worked. That ship was sunk. You and I need to learn that lesson. That's what God's trying to teach us in this little chapter that we just skip over so easily. I want to go back and I want to remind you where this little chapter is. When Acts started, there was not a Christian. No Christian. There was not a church. And throughout the book of Acts, Christians have come into, we're told in the second chapter, how you become a Christian. We watch Christians live. We watch Christians die. We watch churches come into their proper place to be created when Christians were converted. And we watched all of that happen, and we all of that we got to see. And we get to the end, and then God teaches us a very, very, very important lesson that every one of us need to know. I want to share with you that nothing new about this. Christ said exactly the same thing. In the Sermon on the Mount, Of all places, in the first lesson he ever taught, he told us this, what God is illustrating for us with his ship and these sailors. If you will, turn back with me to Matthew 7, verse 21 through 23. Matthew 7. And I want to read these three verses with you, and I want you to notice what a parallel there is there with what we've just studied from the 27th chapter of Acts. Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now he's talking about us. He's talking about our souls. But he that does the will of my Father which is in heaven. That's exactly what we just read. What we just illustrated. What God just illustrated to us. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? In your name we've cast out devils, and in your name we've done many wonderful works. Look at the work we've done. Look at what we've done. We've spent our whole life working for you. That's what they're saying. And I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. Can you imagine anything? We're used to this life. And I know that makes it hard, but can you imagine anything more difficult than standing before Christ and God in the day of judgment, and realize at that point what was taught me in the 27th chapter of Acts is exactly what I needed to pay attention to. When I ignored what God said and went and did what somebody else said, I have no hope. And it doesn't matter how hard I worked and how I fill my time. It doesn't make any difference. You can't work your way to heaven. You have to be obedient to what Christ, what God said. And that's exactly what Christ is saying in this 23rd verse, 21st verse. And Christ is illustrating that for us. I want you to imagine for a moment that you turn on the TV. This happens every day. And you turn on that TV and there's a preacher on there that says, I want you to, now all you have to do right now to save your soul, I want you to pray this prayer with me. Every day. And people take advantage of that. Lots of opinions out there. There's a lot of opinions Paul was dealing with on that day. When they ignored God, they sunk that ship. I want you to imagine for a second that there's a big meeting somewhere, maybe in a tent, maybe in a big auditorium, and somebody tells you that all you have to do is just believe. Just believe. That's all you have to do. Nothing else. Or somebody else uses the word grace and misuses it and tells you there's nothing you have to do because God did it all and Christ did it all. And rather than do what God said, you do that. That's what's being taught us here. That's what God is trying to teach all mankind. Once you ignore what God has said to you, there is no amount of work in the world that will change the outcome. None whatsoever. It can't be done. You see, it's critically important when they lost that ship, when they wrecked it. Because when they wrecked it was when they ignored what God said. And that was back at the beginning. Now, I want to, for all of us, though, I want us to realize that we're not just talking to those that are becoming a Christian. You and I can make the same mistake. They left Caesarea to go to Rome. They're in the middle of their journey. Like you and I are in the middle of our journey. And we have to pay attention to what God has said to us all the way through. Not just when we began, we still, right now, we have to pay attention to what God wants us to do and what God has asked of us. And if we don't, no amount of anything else will help us when the time comes. The lesson is yours. If there's any of you that feel like you have made this mistake, make that right. Don't leave that alone. Do what God said. If you don't know yet what He said, then the book of Acts is a good place to start. Go and study it. There's others here that will help you with that study. Find out what it is that God asks of mankind. It's got to be done. It's the only solution to saving our souls. If you've fallen away from the church, if you've fallen away from the Lord, and those of you that are here on Sunday night are not those people, but if you have fallen away, make that right. Come back to the Lord and do what He says and finish your life in the kingdom, in the Lord. It's our only hope. Will you stand as we sing together?